The debate over aerial spraying of pesticides on timberland in Oregon took another turn this week. A judge in Washington County in Greater Portland ordered Applebee Aviation to stop spraying. It's believed to be the first such injunction in Oregon. Applebee got in trouble with the Oregon Department of Agriculture over previous spraying issues and got its license suspended. ODA said it found evidence Applebee sprayed again in Lake and Clatsop counties while under suspension. Our guests of the balance of the hour worked for Applebee. Darrell Ivey's name you might know. He got sprayed several times and went to the hospital for treatment. He shared his pictures and videos with the Oregonian, and they figured in Applebee's license suspension. Kevin Vanderlee will join us shortly. Darrell Ivey, let's start with you, and thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Well, you're more than welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Tell us a bit about how you came to work for Applebee Aviation in the first place.
Oh, wow. I came down from Alaska. I'm a helicopter mechanic, and my wife needed an operation that a doctor couldn't perform in Alaska, so we came down here, and I needed a job just to pay the bills. It cost a little more than we initially expected, and so I have a truck driver's license with hazardous materials endorsement, and I answered an ad on Craigslist for a truck driver, and so I took a job with Applebee Aviation, and within a couple hours of meeting the folks and taking the urine test and signing on all the spots, I jumped in a truck and drove down to Roseburg, Oregon, and became a member of an aerial helicopter pesticide herbicide spraying crew.
When was that?
That was I'm going on 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. It was in the spring.
All right, so this year, the spring of this year. And had you ever worked in an aerial pesticide spraying operation before?
Not with pesticides and herbicides. I was part of a crew with Evergreen Aviation. We made a 747 into a firefighting aerial vehicle with 20,000 gallons of retardant. So I was pretty familiar with dispersing water or fire retardant, aerial. Mm-hmm. And being a helicopter mechanic, I did quite a bit of work out on fires, where we used the buckets or tanks on the helicopters. So I was semi-familiar with well, not just a helicopter, but, spraying from the air.
And Kevin Vanderlee is on the line with us now, too. Kevin, give us an idea how long ago you started working with Applebee Aviation.
Oh, I started July of last year, and I've completed two spray seasons for them.
Mm-hmm. And now, Darrell, we know your situation pretty well, that you got sprayed. I mean, you can see from the video that is available at OregonLive.com that it went right over you. Kevin, anything like that happened to you?
Oh, yeah, it happened on a pretty regular basis.
Really?
They were spraying the landing. Yeah, they'd be spraying in close proximity to where the bench truck was at and the crew vehicle the one time. And, yeah, you would get sprayed. You would get sprayed. Pretty much on every landing, almost.
Was it just taken as a matter of routine then? I mean, was anybody remarking upon this as anything other than a regular practice?
No, not really. It just seemed to be a standard operating procedure.
All right, so Darrell, let's get your take on this then. I mean, when you mentioned, hey, I'm sitting in my truck, and that's some videos of the truck getting sprayed, you're kind of giggling about it now. It wasn't terribly funny at the time, I'm thinking.
No, I am so angry at myself. I'm very, very upset. All my life, I've touted myself as pretty resilient. As I travel across to different countries with helicopter crews, we're always exposed to harsh situations or climates or et cetera. And when they started spraying the equipment in the trucks, I took on that tough guy mentality of whatever these guys I'm working with can handle, I can handle it too, And, in the oil fields in the Arctic, when it's cold, you just deal with it just like the other guys. And when you're in the jungles, you're getting bit by bugs, you deal with it. Well, this situation was similar. They started spraying the equipment, and, of course, my eyes popped out of my head, and I had to pick my jaw up off the floor. I was thinking, well, that's just really odd because there's all kinds of warnings on these labels, but these guys don't have any third eyes or weird twitches. It must not be affecting them bad. So if they can take it, I can take it. So, yes, I was very surprised, but at the same time, I wasn't near as resilient as I hoped I was.
So what was the indication that you weren't resilient?
The first thing I noticed within 3 to 4 days is I couldn't breathe right. And I'm a non-smoker, and I take very good care of my health. I'm competing on a regular basis against, 23, 24-year-old kids coming out of Afghanistan with helicopter experience, and I'm 45 years old. So I really work at trying to keep myself in good shape, and my lungs are a big part of that. And within 3 days, I was spitting blood up. I couldn't sleep at night at the hotel. And so I'm down at Walgreens buying everything that you possibly can to open my inhalation passages. And I didn't know if it was the chemicals, if it was, it's springtime. I just came down from Alaska. Is it pollen? Is it some bush around here affected me? I didn't know. And so the blood was a big, when I started spitting blood and I couldn't sleep at night, by day three, I knew there was an issue going on, definitely.
Then you went to the hospital at that point, right?
No, sir. I'm going to tough it out. These guys can do it. I can do it.
Uh-huh.
And just like Kevin said, it seemed like general operating procedure. My pilot said that these labels are overrated, that they're not as dangerous as they say they are. That he was a very, very nice guy, and he said he'd been doing it 20 years, and he didn't have any. He didn't look like a mutant ninja turtle or weird splotches. He didn't look weird or act weird. And so I'm thinking, well, this guy's been doing this stuff for 20 years. Maybe he's right. Maybe these labels are a little overrated.
All right. So trouble breathing and you're coughing up blood and stuff like that. So Kevin Vanderleet, had you had any symptoms like that yourself?
Yeah, my breathing has been impaired tremendously. And I suffer the same symptoms. I cough up blood in the morning. I blow blood from my sinuses on a regular basis. And I haven't been around the chemical for quite some time now.
Mm-hmm. So. How long? Was it a couple months now that you've been
since? My last day of work was the 17th of September.
Mm-hmm. All right, so you were working for Appleby until very recently then?
Yes, that is correct.
All right, are you planning to work for them again? Do they expect you back?
I don't think it would be a wise choice for health reasons.
But interesting. So, wow. But so it sounds like did you guys, and Kevin, let me start with you. Did you try to make your concerns about this known to anybody up the chain from you in the chain of command at Appleby?
Oh, yeah. I talked to my pilot about it. We were doing a DNR job there in Washington State, and the nozzles were leaking profusely.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to load the helicopter from down under beneath the nozzles and was getting dripped on quite a bit. So I brought it to his attention several times, but the situation was never addressed.
And then, Darrell Ivey, you did finally go to the hospital at some point, is that right?
Oh, yeah. I toughed it out to the point where I couldn't operate anymore. I had lost so much sleep that I was sleep deprived. I wasn't eating right. I couldn't urinate properly. I had diarrhea. I had welts on my arm. I had welts on my tongue. My throat was swollen. And it felt like I just came out of, 50,000 foot out of an airliner. My ears hadn't popped. Is that sort of that you have an ear infection, but you don't.
Right.
So it got to the point where I had to go to the hospital. There was just no ifs, ands, or buts. So what I did.
Hang on a second. We'll get to what they discovered at the hospital when we come back. Darrell Ivey and Kevin Vanderleet join us on the Jefferson Exchange, both employees at one time of Appleby Aviation. We'll talk more about aerial pesticide spraying on the exchange in 1 minute. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about aerial helicopter spraying of pesticides and herbicides, a common practice on private forest lands in Oregon, and a practice that got a company called Appleby Aviation afoul of state authorities in Oregon. Appleby had paid a fine for some issues with overspray of employees and in some cases residential areas, and was working to get its license reinstated. And while the license was suspended, apparently sprayed in both Lake and Clatsop counties, which led the Oregon Department of Agriculture to go to court for an injunction issued Monday this week by a Washington County judge. Appleby Aviation's short statement was, "We have been treated unfairly." That's what Michael Appleby said Tuesday when asked to comment on the case. He declined to elaborate but said his company would be issuing a press release with more information. As of this point, there has been no further press release, at least released through Appleby Aviation's website. Darrell Ivey and Kevin Vanderleet both worked for Appleby Aviation at different times and have reported publicly being sprayed and having some medical issues because of those. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, jx@jeffnet.org by email. So, Darrell, how long then? You said you did take a while. You're going to tough it out with the rest of the guys, but you did finally seek medical attention. How long after your first exposure?
17 days in. On day 17, we were getting near the end of the spray season, and we were told to clean the big bulk trucks out where you mix the chemicals. And Appleby Aviation does not put hazardous material placards on this truck. It looks like a water truck. And that way, when it dries up and through into the mountains and through neighborhoods, a lot of people don't realize what's going up into the top of their headwaters to their wells or their drinking water. So it looks like a pretty vanilla truck going up the hill. We were told to clean it up towards the end of the job, and the gentleman that I was working with was spraying with a fire hose and got me in the mouth with atrazine and some other really bad chemicals, and got me. It really affected me, like Kevin said, when it actually, instead of being aerated, when it actually physically has a liquid gets on you, it hits you really hard. And that was in the morning. So by nighttime, I was in the emergency room in a decontamination unit with the hazmat team at Roseburg Hospital wanting to incinerate my clothes.
Wow. And how long before you began to feel good again?
Immediately. The moment I was away from the chemicals, you know, I had some lingering effects for months, and I still have respiratory effects. But, you know, it felt like an ear infection. It went away within a couple months. My welts went away within a couple weeks. My prostate, you know, I was able to urinate properly within a month. My throat went back to, it came back to the point where I could swallow properly. The sores on my tongue and lips went away. So the moment I was taken away from the chemicals, a lot of the immediate effects they diminished and went away. Now my doctors are saying that the chemicals, inhaling the chemicals over that length of time has scarred my lung tissue, and scar tissue it's not as elastic as normal tissue. So although I can still go to the gym and I can still exercise, my lungs do not expand and shrink as they normally would.
Now, Daryl, you said you had not worked in specifically this kind of aerial pesticide herbicide spraying before, right?
No, sir.
All right, Kevin, had you?
No, I have not.
Okay, I'm just curious to know if either of you got a sense for, I mean, because, you know, we're talking about Appleby Aviation where you work, but I'm just curious to know if you either of you got a sense for whether the kinds of practices you witnessed are considered standard operating procedure in that industry.
Well, Kevin was there for 2 years. I met him only for maybe 5 minutes. I believe it was the first day I was on the job. He was also in Roseburg, and then he separated to another helicopter crew, but he would know more about that than me. I was only there 17 days.
Mm-hmm. And Kevin, what did you hear about you know, the kinds of things that get done on this process?
Well, I haven't really heard too much about other companies. We worked in close proximity to other companies, and, you know, it was pretty much the same procedure from what I could tell across the ravine. But as far as actually working for a company and having any knowledge of how they do stuff, I really can't elaborate on that.
All right. For folks who don't really know much about this process, I mean, why are pesticides and herbicides sprayed out there on private timberland?
Well, this is the interesting thing. When I took the job, I was thinking that it was immediate practice. Seneca has forester representatives on site from morning to evening, dictating and orchestrating what chemicals are mixed, when we spray, in the rain, on slopes. They control the whole situation, and so I thought we were in good hands because you have, you know, experienced people. Everybody's just doing what seems to be routine. What caught my attention is the fact that they were locking the gates behind us. We were ripping the labels off of the containers, which I didn't understand. And there was a whole lot of red lights going off. But I had what I believe these are official trucks. They got big names on them. Seneca says they're the steward of the forest. And so you put a lot of faith into people that have been on the job for 20, 30 years. Some of the guys at Seneca have been there for quite a while. And so I just assumed that it was all normal operating procedure down the board. But the whole objective is money on the crops. Back to your question there is, if you do a clear cut, you take everything out. That includes berry bushes, weeds, every other type of tree, shrub, doesn't matter what it is, it gets clear cut. Then they put in their money crop, the tree that they want to grow. And they don't want any competition with that money crop. And that includes anything that a bug might need to live in, a deer might want to eat, or a fox might want to live in or eat. All other foliage is kilt. And so they create a Long Island tea, I call it. It's a concoction of herbicides and pesticides. Some of them are illegal in other countries even. The countries that manufacture atrazine won't even allow it to be used in their own country. So, and I've learned this since obviously I took the job, but the object is to eradicate every other species of plant in this clear cut. And these clear cuts are huge, by the way. And we do 8, 9, 10 a day. So you're talking about 10, you're talking about a lot of acres, 1,000 acres a day just with one helicopter being sprayed with these Long Island TK toxins that kill everything except for the money crop. So it's no longer really a forest. What you're creating is a farm.
All right, let's take a call. We have Lisa and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about aerial pesticide spraying with Daryl Ivey and Kevin Vanderlee, both exposed by Appleby Aviation. Go ahead, Lisa.
Good morning, Jeffrey, and thank you, Daryl and Kevin, for sharing your experiences. Daryl was just starting to talk a little bit about oversight on the spray landings and who's monitoring and who's making sure laws are being followed properly. I mean, now we know that laws were not being followed, and in fact, what Appleby and Seneca were doing were illegal activities. So can you talk a little bit more about how our state agencies are monitoring the situation and how we can be assured as public who needs this clean drinking water to drink and need not to be sprayed by pesticides drifting on winds? You know, how can we make sure our state agencies are monitoring and ensuring public health?
All right. Thanks for the question, Lisa. Appreciate that. You want to take that, Daryl?
Boy, that's a good one. You know, like I said, I put a lot of faith in the folks that were monitoring us, and they call themselves forest representatives. And crazy enough, or ironic, they have pesticide herbicide applicator licenses themselves, and they go through specific training on how to apply these chemicals. And so I put a lot of faith into that, but after I got sick, after they sprayed the equipment, after I started reading the labels and doing my research at the hotel at nighttime, I realized that these things are dangerous. And the thought that really, really hit me the hardest and really, really, it came out of left field and sucker punched me is when I realized that I'm 45 years old. I'm done making babies and I'm very, very healthy. And if these chemicals can bring me to my knees, what would they do to a pregnant lady or to a developing child? And so it really brought things into perspective about the lack of oversight. When I saw the drift, I filmed it. When I saw them filming over creeks, I filmed it. When I saw something going wrong and the red light in my head went off, I filmed it. I've never done that in my life before. I've worked in Peru, Papua New Guinea, Australia, the Alaska slopes where they don't allow the Discovery Channel to film. And I've never filmed any of the companies I work for bending, the best way to explain this is bending the speed limit sign. You know, I think all companies do what they need to do to get the job done. But this time around, my jaw was on the floor. I could not believe it. And when I realized that these chemicals were affecting me so detrimentally. And then I thought about, oh my gosh, I'm driving this big truck with 5,000 gallons of chemicals and it's leaking everywhere. It was leaking. This truck was literally leaking chemicals as I drove it through neighborhoods, up little valleys, over creeks. And I was looking at the houses that I was driving by and you could see the kids playing in the yards. And it just hit me. I got to film it.
Had you ever felt anything like this before? Because, you know, your documentation was so complete. I mean, the videos you brought to the Oregonian, you got the whistleblower tag applied to you pretty quickly
it's
there.
It ruined my life.
Really?
My life is hell. I live in a one-bedroom apartment. I fight with Liberty Mutual all the time, my workers' comp carrier. They want me to go away. Everybody wants me to go away. This is a giant white elephant in the living room. And if I hadn't taken the videos, and there are more videos, by the way, that are going to be released real soon, and Shane Anderson with Northport Studios is actually making a full documentary of this with some very shocking footage. But no, I've never, never in my life, in all the places I've been, if you go to my Facebook page, all of my photos are public. You'll see I've been in some amazing places and done some amazing things. Never have I ever seen... Never has my heart dropped and sank so low, knowing that I was part of something so terrible. I've worked in oil companies in Peru and Lima, where I've seen them do bad things to the river and to the native wildlife there. I never filmed it. I just did my job. I've seen things in Alaska where wildlife was dealt with that you and me would go to the zoo and pay to see these creatures. And I've never filmed it. This was so horrendous, and my moral compass couldn't let it go. I just had to film it, to the detrimental effects of my body.
Kevin Vanderlei, you worked more than one season for Applebee, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. What got you to come back? Because it just sounds like there weren't many differences between the two seasons.
What got me to come back? Well, primarily the money. It's actually a pretty decent paying job.
Mm-hmm. Did you do any documenting yourself? I mean, we had scads of videos from Daryl. I just wonder if you got any stuff recorded or documented in what you saw out there.
I have some videos of the aerial application. And I've got a few snapshots of the truck, you know, being drenched in chemical. But no, I was usually a little on the busy side and not able to do a lot of documentation.
Mm-hmm. What would you like to see happen from this point forward? I mean, Applebee got an injunction, which apparently is the first of its kind in Oregon, where the judge said stop applying pesticides while your license is suspended. This came out of the judge in Washington County. Applebee Aviation is based in Banks. What would you like to see happen from this point forward, either to the company or just generally in the aerial spraying business, Kevin?
Well, I'd like to see it done more conscientiously, where, you know, they're not contaminating water supplies. They're looking out for their employees. Would probably be number one. Supplying some proper PPE would be good.
PPE?
Personal protective equipment.
Ah, mm-hmm.
Keeping the exposure to a minimum for the employees.
Maybe not park it in the middle of the landing where they're spraying would help.
Oh, it's... Yeah, that was part of it too, Daryl. You're saying parking in the middle of the landing.
Yeah. Why would you park yourself in the middle of a landing that's going to get sprayed? It just seems common sense. A 5-year-old would figure out. You know what? The wind's going that way. Let's park over here on the edge, and you can go spray over there. It's common sense. Why would you park in the middle of it and get sprayed?
All right. So back to you then, Daryl. What else would you like to see about this change in the process here?
Well, my whole life has changed, and my perspective on this whole issue has changed. Normally, I would take Kevin's opinion of a little more oversight would be good. But after seeing what the chemicals have done to me, after reading about what they've done to other people, after having to run around trying to ensure that different agencies do their jobs, the FAA still has yet to come forth with fines or charges. ODOT barely came out, and the EPA is still asking for more evidence when they have more evidence than all the other agencies combined. And so I've sort of fallen a little more to the left to the fact that, number one, why are we spraying our forests with chemicals that were used in Vietnam? 2,4-D is half of the ingredient used in Agent Orange. Atrazine is banned in countries all over the world, including the one that makes it. So I've moved off a little to the other side after I saw what they did to me and still do to me. And I'm still fighting with the financial end of things. I live in squalor. And I believe it or not, this is ironic. I applied for a job with a company here in Oregon that is trying to change the Oregon Forest Practices Act that's antiquated, and that's how a lot of these timber companies get away with what they're doing, is these laws are old.
Yeah, lots of complaints about the Oregon Forest Practices Act. I'm glad you guys are both well enough to be able to talk to us today. Daryl Ivey and Kevin Vanderlei were both exposed to pesticides while employees of Applebee Aviation. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you.
All right, take care.